Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. Well, though I am taking a break right now, I'm sitting up at Highlight Reservoir, watching all the people out there on the frozen lake. They're braver than I am right now. Anyway, taking a break from doing taxes, but I'm still working on them. So I have two more Desert Oracle Radio episodes to share with you. These are both from 2018, about a legend of the desert from the days before the quarantine. First, we have La Llorona, released by Ken Lane, March 9th, 2018. Watch out for those waterways.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Well, night has fallen on the Mojave, and not too long ago, I was at the saloon here in Joshua Tree with my friend Jason P. Woodbury, the writer from Arizona. We were talking about the strange old ruins around his rural hometown in Arizona, and then he started talking about La Llorona, the weeping woman, the banshee that walks the riverbank and the lake shores and the irrigation canals, looking for her children, looking for the children that she drowned, the children she murdered in a rage against who or what. There are many variations of the story, and if you've lived in the Southwest or in Mexico, you've heard the tales. Maybe you've seen La Llorona. Now, Jason Woodbury is from out by Coolidge and Casa Grande, mostly rural and agricultural areas in the Gila River watershed. And there's the San Pedro River down there as well, and the Santa Cruz River, both of these branching off the Gila River. And an interesting thing is that both the Santa Cruz and the San Pedro have their headwaters in the Sonoran Desert Mountains of Mexico and the San Rafael Valley and the Patagonia Mountains to the west at the north end of the Mexican state of Sonora, the land of the last Mexican wild wolves. You know, there's a pair of them under protective custody of the Living Desert Zoo down in Indian Wells and Palm Desert. I hope they get to go back home someday. You know, there are only about 400 Mexican wolves left on Earth, and only about 140 of those are in the wild. Now, when I say river and we're talking about the desert, I'm talking about the usual desert river, especially as you leave this blessed valley and the mountains around it. Rivers that are mostly dry most of the time, but that become a raging catastrophe when monsoon rains and thunderstorms and the occasional Pacific winter front dumps upon the desert. Anyway, that river valley is something special. It's a beautiful land along the border, and we should be able to enjoy it like people can enjoy the wild lands where Italy and Switzerland meet, like we can in so much of the Canadian lakes and forests that meet our U.S. border without ugliness. The ugliness not only of concrete walls and mean-spirited police types and drug kingpins and the kind of sinful people who leaves poor farm workers to die in the back of a tractor trailer under that brutal sun. Well, maybe someday. You know, that area, that southeastern corner of Arizona and the northernmost part of Sonora, that was an old Spanish land grant, the San Rafael de la Zanja land grant. We are lucky that it was not in the path of development for most of the time it existed, and so much of it was intact when the Nature Conservancy bought the largest remaining holding, the old Sharp Ranch. And they keep it like it was. And then the state of Arizona did the right thing, as they do from time to time, and acquired parts to the south, and that's the San Rafael Natural Area. And it's incredible to see, because it doesn't look like the southern Arizona you think you know. It's a grassland. Beautiful grassland with cottonwoods and foothills. It never became so degraded like a lot of the grassland that was eventually overgrazed and run down and invaded by too many cactus and invasive weeds and invasive brush. I mean, it's so pretty that Hollywood used this very valley for an imagined and perfect Oklahoma for the movie musical of the same name. Pasture for the cattle, spinach and termotters. Flowers on the prairie where the June bugs zoom. Plenty of air and plenty of room. Well, an interesting thing about this land grant is that it wasn't owned by the usual one percenters, the political and military and agricultural bosses who wound up with immense Spanish land grants in most of the Southwest. In fact, a group of about 30 families, certainly not destitute, but working ranch families in and around the little town of Santa Cruz, they own this land grant together as a group, and they did keep it for another half a century after the valley became part of the United States. The Sharp family owned it for a century, from 1900 to 1999. And it was about to go on the open market in 1998 when the Nature Conservancy came up with the cash. The Sharp family wanted to preserve the valley. They knew how special it was, but they could not afford to protect it by themselves. Arizona is full of stories like that, especially the southern part of the state. There are all kinds of incredible nature preserves, some part of federally designated wilderness or national parks, some part of the state park system, some are tribal lands, and some little visited and very nice places are kept forever by environmental groups. And that's a good idea sometimes, times like now. Well, I got to thinking about these desert rivers and the ghosts and the demons that are often seen around such waterways by night, outside of town, out by the cotton and the alfalfa farms, along the irrigation canals and the ditches, about how wherever you go in the West, you hear stories. You hear stories about a lady in white or a dark-haired woman in a glowing white gown, the Spanish lady she is sometimes called. And I thought about the irrigation canal in South Phoenix where an uncle I never met tumbled into that water and didn't come out. It was a long ago day, a long ago hot day in that sun and dust. The water must have felt fine at first. He was just a little kid, hardly more than a toddler. People drown in irrigation canals all the time, especially children. Children too little to work, playing in the cool water nearby their parents and siblings or out in the fields. Nearby but out of reach. La Llorona takes many of them. She is hungry for death yet miserable because of it. That's the story anyway. I guess I'm never going to learn to roll my R's correctly. A few years ago, one of the big brewing companies based in Mexico City secretly released a supposed traffic camera video that purportedly showed La Llorona at a crossroads, a busy intersection at night. I think the cars drove right through her, and it was a big sensation, and then the beer company admitted it was a marketing stunt. Well, Well, anybody who knows about La Llorona knows you aren't going to see her at a busy intersection downtown. She is on the edge, the outskirts. She requires darkness and quiet. Quiet so that you can hear her awful, chilling wails. Oh, it's a dreadful sound carrying across a lonesome night. I don't like it at all. I was camping with a couple of biologists some years back, and we heard that awful cry around the spring in the cottonwoods up the hillside from our campsite. And one of these characters says, "Oh, that's just a mountain lion." And I said, "Well, if it's just a mountain lion, why don't you walk back up there and take a picture of it?" These glowing apparitions are often seen around mines, too. Old mines, closed-down mines, maybe a silver mine that collapsed on a dozen men. Or a coal mine explosion in Utah that took 199 souls in an instant. These apparitions walk the lonesome two-lane highways and back roads at night, and oh, they may well ask you for a ride. They may have some sob story about being left out there by an angry husband, robbed by bandits. And you can talk to her. You can understand her. And afterwards, after whatever breaks a spell and sends you driving away as fast as you can, you may remember that you could not see her face. You may remember that it was there, maybe inches away, but you just cannot remember what it looked like. All you remember is a bright, blank oval where the face should have been. Why don't they have faces? Or why can't we remember their faces? Pretty much every time a desert wanderer or a prophet in the Bible comes into contact with a spirit, an entity of some kind, they can't see the face, or they can't recall the details. Oh, it's an awful thing to look somebody in the eye and realize they have no eyes, no nose, no features at all. That's an awful thing to encounter in the night. Or to see looming over you in a darkened room. The memory of the land, of the irrigation and cultivation of the Salt River and Gila River valleys over two millennia, it persists not only in the canals with their ancient pottery shards shoring up the levees, but in the collective memory of today's Arizonans. It is in and around the sprawl of Phoenix that La Llorona takes forms unknown in the rest of the country. It is here that she has made the difficult journey from ancient canals to modern plumbing. Within the restrooms of elementary schools and neighborhood parks of Phoenix and Glendale and Tucson, La Llorona haunts the sinks and the bathroom mirrors. Here, instead of the Bloody Mary legend of Catholic schools in other parts of the country, it is the weeping woman who appears in the darkened mirror. Invoke her at your own risk by chanting her cursed name. Try it tonight.
Long the period over which the Medicaid expansion is both ends of it.
This is 107.7 FM Information Radio for the Desert Oracle Preserve. want to tell you about what you can expect or not expect during your visit to this land of natural and unnatural wonders. Please bring plenty of water and keep your cell phone turned off so that if you need emergency assistance, you might have enough battery power to get a 911 call out, assuming you can find a place with a cell phone signal, which is unlikely. Do not camp outside of campgrounds. This is not only to protect the desert from internet hobos parked all over, killing all the plants and breaking the desert crust and leaving a lot of toilet paper and the cholla, but to protect you. We are obligated to try to protect you from the elements and also from the locals, who are decidedly unfriendly about finding a dozen people from Brooklyn having a camp out in the driveway of somebody's cabin on an acre or two. We also hope to protect you from threats that are not scientifically proven, but still seem to do a lot of damage. The Mojave Desert is a land of natural and unnatural wonders. 12,000 years ago, you would not recognize the place. It was then a green and welcoming land of huge inland seas, thick forest on the shorelines, giant sloth wandering around. Well, that time is long past. Now it is hot and dry, or cold and dry, and we no longer have giant sloths or dire wolves or other such megafauna. If you encounter what appears to be an enormous animal or creature of some kind, this is most likely one of these supernatural entities long reported around the preserve. These entities rarely harm humans in a way that doctors can help, but they have tortured and mutilated domestic and agricultural animals, mostly open-range cattle, for many years. It is the policy of this preserve to prevent cattle mutilations by preventing cattle from wandering our preserve lands. If you find a rare desert stream and notice all the vegetation is crushed and there's a lot of crumbling cow pies floating in the once fresh water, we do have a trained crew of preserve professionals, more or less, who will take care of the cattle in question. And those are also free barbecue nights here at our main campground. Come on by and eat heartily. We might even have beer for the grown-ups. This is Desert Oracle Preserve Informational Radio, 107.7 FM on your radio dial. You will encounter several sections of open cattle range outside the preserve. The best of these, with very few wandering cattle and a conservation easement to protect the property for all time. These historic ranches are known for their charming period architecture, particularly the board and batten bunkhouse style of minimalist 20th century leisure equestrian residences, and are also known for documented anomalous phenomena, including red-eyed humanoid entities and seemingly intelligently controlled orbs of swirling light, which have been known to chase people down the trail from Shoshone Point and bring Jackass Mesa. After hours, trespassers are subject to arrest, if they're lucky. Visitors are advised to register at the ranger station before embarking upon backcountry trails. Visitors should provide contact information for at least 3 relatives and a current employer, if you have one, and blood tests may be required for all hike-in campers at Dead Lake and Desert Willow Falls. There is no cell phone service in or around Shovel Valley, Lost Horse Ledge, Pearson's Hole, Lost Hope Canyon, and Quartz Wash. Antelope Flat is strictly off limits 24 hours per day. Antelope Flat tours have been discontinued due to security concerns as of October 12, 2001. It is prohibited to stop your vehicle between Cholla Ridge and Quail Station. This road is closed at either end between dusk and dawn 365 days a year. The fringe-toed lizard is an interesting desert friend you may encounter on the dune trails on sunny afternoons. It is a handsome lizard. Do not harass the fringe-toed lizard. We have a wide variety of snakes in the area, many of them venomous, all of them both charming and beautiful. The Mojave rattlesnake, often called the Mojave green, despite a tendency to be colors other than green, is unique in having both a hemotoxin and a neurotoxin in its venom. A very dangerous snake if you are dumb enough to tangle with one. Do not harass snakes or any other wildlife or local resident. Watch where you step and watch where you reach. Most rattlesnake bites are the result of people sticking their hands or other extremities where they're not looking. The rest of the bites are due to drunken men deciding to show off for other drunken men. Disturbing any wildlife, including these pit vipers, is a crime punishable by one of our rangers chasing you out of the preserve with a stick. Other rattlesnakes in our high desert preserve include the western diamondback and the sidewinder and the speckled rattlesnake, all quite capable of sending you to our questionable local hospital for longer than you can afford to stay. Antivenom runs about $1,500 per vial, and you'll need a half dozen vials along with the usual emergency room costs and blood work. And all that is if you are lucky enough to avoid permanent nerve damage or organ failure. The cactus wren is a lovely and charming bird with a rich vocabulary and generally amusing personality. They nest in cholla that have grown tall enough to be safe from the coyotes and other creatures that enjoy eating fresh eggs. It takes decades for a cholla to grow high enough to provide a safe nesting spot for the cactus wren. So please let these cactus grow wherever you see them. This is KZDZ Informational Radio for visitors. If you find human remains, whether disturbed by scavengers in a shallow grave or simply dumped on the roadside, do not touch or disturb the human remains. Make note of your location and report the human remains to a ranger. Do not make a video with the human remains. It's in very bad taste, very disrespectful.
As the suburbs covered this wild area of the western Mojave, their monster, Yucca Man, as we call it in Joshua Tree, in Yucca Valley, 29 Palms, seemed to be on a rampage. There were stories going back to the Spanish settlers in the areas around Lake Elizabeth and the foothills just outside. But in the late 60s and early 70s, the reports of the Desert Sasquatch, as the newspapers in Lancaster and Palmdale called it, went off the charts. The monster was seen running in between the divided 14 highway. The monster was seen scratching at the sliding glass doors of new suburban homes built upon the desert. There was a child who was sent out back to tell his father that dinner was ready. The child never returned. Hours later, found shaking only a few feet behind the house. When asked what had happened, said that a large, hairy man had appeared and told him he could not pass. At Edwards itself, the security guards who worked the base, they were called the Desert Rats, they were Air Force police, had stories about their encounters with these various creatures on the great dry lake bed runways of Edwards. That when they met a decade ago for a reunion, the 1970s Desert Rats from Edwards, all anyone wanted to talk about were the monsters. These were the shared experiences, more than anything else, from all these years of working on this base, that these men, they were all men in the Desert Rats, brought back after all these years. These stories did not leave their minds. If you have ever encountered anything beyond the norm, you know it's not something you forget. And you also know if you talk about it in polite company, people will think you're crazy. So you wait for the opportunity, and the opportunity was here. Here's some of the stories I told. There are sensors all around Edwards, the most secret aircraft in the American arsenal. So in their little pickup trucks with the knobby tires, the Desert Rats would be sent out when the sensors were tripped, when there were reports of something, eyewitness or otherwise. And down at the east end of the lake, they repeatedly encountered something that they called Marvin of the Mojave.
This has been Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from the Mojave Wilderness and Joshua Tree. Listen on March 17th, that is next Saturday, up in the high desert. We will be part of Curate Joshua Tree's art event at Outpost Projects. That is 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. I will be there with our soundscape wizard, the one who calls himself Red, Blue, Black, Silver, and he's going to have all kinds of strange analog synthesizers and looping devices. And you know, I've heard that our old friend Brendan Mays might be in the neighborhood. He may stop by. We're going to be broadcasting from a vintage yellow trailer right there on the property. You can hang around with a cocktail. It should be a fine evening. From Amboy to Zyzix and across the Great Mojave Wilderness, this has been Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from KCDZ 107.7 FM in downtown Joshua Tree, Friday nights at 10 p.m. Listen live on your car radio, on your kitchen table radio. And when you're away from the high desert, listen on your digital device with our free podcast of this broadcast, available wherever you get your podcast, your iTunes, your Stitcher, your Google Play, your TuneIn. However you listen, we much appreciate it. Desert Oracle Radio Live is coming back April 26th. That's a Thursday evening, 6 p.m., allegedly in the Annenberg Theater at the Palm Springs Art Museum. It will be free museum Thursday night. It's going to be during the Andy Warhol exhibition. I advise you to attend. And if you're looking for a less crowded desert, if you'd like to get out in the wild and not be stuck in traffic behind all your neighbors from Venice Beach or wherever, try Mojave National Preserve. Try Mojave Trails National Monument. And just a little further down the road, and boy, it's worth it. Have a good time out there, and good night from the Voice of the Desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGBM Bozeman Community Radio at 95.9 FM. Ken Lane produced this next episode on March 16th, 2018. He's talking about those lights in the sky again. Here is UFOs and the Jungian Desert.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Well, night has fallen on the Mojave. The skies have been very busy, and not just at night. And this weird UFO group keeps releasing these little videos that are supposed to show UFOs zipping around and being chased by fighter jets. And that first one was pretty interesting. But this kind of stuff sure gets stale fast. It really wears out its welcome. And so people go back to their other concerns, their routines, and the various clear and present dangers, and we do have a lot of those. Meanwhile, there's this wild report from a transportation news site called The Drive with a recording of FAA radio traffic over southeastern Arizona, Tucson, and Saguaro National Park. It's a real recording. It was released by the Federal Aviation Administration on the afternoon of February 24, a Learjet run by Phoenix Air reported something zooming overhead at 40,000 feet. The tower says there's no traffic that they know of. And another pilot chimes in, a UFO? Well, there's some mundane radio traffic for a few minutes, and then the crew of the American Airlines Airbus, headed in the opposite direction, sees it as well, putting out all kinds of light. And off it goes, still around 40,000 feet. A very similar thing happened over Northern California back in October. Air traffic between Portland, Oregon and San Francisco saw this white craft way up high, moving around, no transponder, nothing anybody knew about. Many strange sights in the sky, signs and wonders, maybe. Maybe it's all like Carl Jung suggested. Maybe all those lights in the sky, all those wheels in the sky, maybe they're magically generated or psychically generated by the weird feelings of a society, of a civilization. Maybe that's it. Maybe our own craziness creates the UFOs. Carl Jung wrote an interesting little book on the subject, Flying Saucers, a Modern Myth of Things Seen in the Sky. He had no doubt people were having real experiences, often with multiple witnesses, people of supposed good character. And even some of Carl Jung's trusted colleagues had reported their encounters to him. People told Carl Jung some wild stories. When he was still a psychoanalyst working with Freud in Vienna, Carl Jung's therapy patients began reporting strange dreams to him, strange visions. Visions of horror that seemed too awful to be real. These visions were of Nazi Germany in the decade to come, genocide, extermination camps, mountains of human bones. And then in the 1950s, UFOs were being seen all over the world. Every kind of crazy thing. Big V-shaped things with intense lights, like in Lubbock, Texas. Or weird silvery ghost rockets over Finland and Sweden. Or all those saucers over Joshua Tree and Death Valley. Atomic nerves, maybe. Well, he began collecting UFO data from newspaper reports and from people he knew as colleagues and patients all the way back in 1946. We didn't even have the term flying saucer in 1946. That would come with Kenneth Arnold's sighting in 1947. When a Washington State newspaper's misunderstanding of his description changed the fleet of boomerang-shaped UFOs over the Cascades into something else entirely, flying saucers, that's when a new type of UFO became the most commonly seen, a flying disc like two saucers pressed together. If the newspaper editor had screwed it up a little worse, everybody might be seeing flying sausages instead, which they do, it turns out. We call them cigar-shaped craft. Almost any shape of commonly reported UFO can look like a flying saucer in profile. Even black triangles and diamond-shaped craft. By the 1950s, Carl Jung was reading every crazy book on the subject. It baffled him. It intrigued him. He could not decide whether they were physical objects or psychic manifestations of a kind he believed marked the beginnings and endings of eras here on Earth, the great eras of civilization. In his book about the flying saucers, he said that UFOs must be mass visions, evidence of the collective consciousness waking up to immense change. Listen to this. As we know from ancient Egyptian history, they are manifestations of psychic changes which always appear at the end of one Platonic month and at the beginning of another. Apparently, they are changes in the constellation of psychic dominance of the archetypes, or gods as they used to be called, which bring about or accompany long-lasting transformations of the collective psyche. The transformation started in the historical era and left its traces first in the passing of the Aeon of Taurus into that of Aries, and then of Aries into Pisces, whose beginning coincides with the rise of Christianity. We are now nearing that great change which may be expected when the spring point enters Aquarius. Age of Aquarius, is that where all that started? An interesting thing about the supposed Age of Aquarius is that nobody can agree on when it starts or what it means. The people who follow medieval astrology say that the Age of Aquarius will bring in a world ruled by the power-hungry, immoral corporate boards ruling from the shadows and secrecy. That only the ability to win wars, trade wars, cold wars, hot wars, culture wars will matter in this grim new age. Knowledge and technology and science will be used not for the good of humanity, but only to exploit it, to cheapen it, to punish it, to abuse it, to treat the billions of people like the unloved consumers that they are. What comes after the age of Christianity, the age when Western civilization led the world? Proponents of medieval astrology predict a dark spiritual age, a time when anything positive about Christianity will be mocked, and a cult of death will be all that's left of what once claimed to be a moral philosophy. A moral theology based on love, on forgiveness, on caring for those in your society. Love thy neighbor when it meant helping your fellow woman, your fellow man. A time when evil leaders, people without morals, without a good bone in their body, will use their business interests, their financial interests as their only guiding light. Where death is something to laugh at, where love does not exist, where the earth is something to rape and destroy as quickly as possible, and when it all goes to hell, which it will, the billionaires who run Russia and China and America will leave on luxury rocket ships. They will escape and leave the billions to fight each other for the crumbs, the world on fire. But because of a Broadway musical with a lot of catchy songs about the hippie movement, it became common belief that the Age of Aquarius coincided with the end of the 20th century and that the 21st century would be a very beautiful time. Not for the stock market or whatever, but for the world, for humanity, for nature and the environment. Books like Silent Spring by the brilliant writer and marine biologist Rachel Carson had motivated a lot of the baby boomers to become interested in ecology, the idea of the Earth as a living system that we, as the apex predator and technological wonders of the planet, should choose to protect and defend, and that the balance of our technological civilization and the natural world would eventually work out, could eventually work out for the good of us all, for the good of all of us, the people, of course, who need fresh air and clean water, who need nature and wildlife, not just to survive, but to thrive, to live well in the world. Jesus said that we cannot live by bread alone. We can survive on bread. We can probably survive pretty well on that wheat bread from the health food store in Joshua Tree with the 9 ancient grains and whatever, full of nutrients, or at least a lot of them, but that's not a full life, only eating bread. Or getting most of your calories from soda pop and sports drinks, as most Americans do, caloric beverages. Well, at least wine tastes good. It makes you feel good in moderation. It's good for your heart, too, in moderation. In moderation, unless it's a wedding or other such big occasion, and then you want to have more wine. You want the DJ to play all the favorites on your wedding night. Nobody is going to leave because the DJ plays Back in Black again at 11:45 p.m. Nobody's going to say, that's out of line, or I've had it with you people. Nobody good, anyway. And if you run out of wine, you better hope somebody like Jesus comes around. Hope to see his face. Jesus never wanted you to live on bread alone. You cannot live on bread alone. It is written. People cannot live only by bread. Man cannot live on bread alone. What did he mean? What did that mean? Well, the world is full of people anxious to tell you what Jesus meant if you send a check for $25 to the Church of the Sacred Bleeding Heart of Jesus located somewhere in Los Angeles, California. But the consensus is that Jesus meant there is more to life than just surviving, more to life than just getting by. Your life should be spiritually satisfied as well, spiritually meaningful, live by a code of basic, decent human conduct, the golden rule, the cowboy code. You might get your spiritual nourishment in a temple or a church or a mosque or an art museum or a honky-tonk or a book club. Or going out birdwatching or surfing at dawn or taking a daily hike in the high desert to breathe the sweet smell of creosote after a late winter rain. To hear the cheery song of all those little birds. Everyone getting set up for that perfect time. The 11 days of spring in the desert. UFOs in their modern form became a global outrage in the last years of the 1940s, becoming a global panic in the 1950s, leading to congressional inquiries and Air Force interviews with witnesses. Thousands of people attended the UFO gatherings at Giant Rock, events well attended by spies from all sides in the Cold War. Russia exploited the UFO panic in hopes of breaking down American society. As Russian intelligence has always chipped away at America's insanity, its racism, its inequality, Russia did not have a comfortable middle class, could not compete with our Detroit tail fins, our brand new highways, our gleaming airports, our color televisions, and good telephone service and rock and roll. All the things we used to enjoy in America before America was sold and beaten down and sold again, caught and bought and sold again. A fun thing to tell your children if they want a toy from the chain toy store, the only one in town if you live in a town, is that the toy store is closing and all the people who work there will be fired and not have a job anymore and not have money to buy toys or even food for their own children. Because a special kind of intentionally destructive investment fund called a vulture fund buys companies that serve some purpose, and then billions of dollars of debt get shoveled over this previously functional company. And once these fund managers have killed the thing and sold off all the sellable parts of flesh and bone and blood remaining, well, then they abandon whatever's left of the corpse. That's an insult to vultures, to our beloved turkey vultures, our buzzards, our beautiful and weird relatives of the giant condors, our desert friends who only eat what has come to the end of its natural life, who clean up rather than create disasters fueled by their own hate, made entirely of evil, the very real energy of evil, the fuel of the human hybrid devils. Vultures are not evil. They are not capable of it. Well, anyway, by the 1960s, the UFO thing evolved into the abduction story, Betty and Barney Hill medical exams by the aliens, that whole setup. And by the 1970s and 1980s, well, it had turned into a horror movie. The Pascagoula abduction, those hideous robot monsters, the dread, always the dread. And then the local TV news and the tabloids and the uneasy sense that the government, all governments everywhere, was not only studying this phenomenon, but they also might be in on it. Deeply in on the whole rotten deal. Boy, what a bunch of dummies we are. How easily we are tricked. How easily we are led astray, led to shoot ourselves in the foot or maybe right in the head, driven to madness, driven to insanity. James Forrestal was America's first Secretary of Defense under Truman. He had a long and distinguished leadership career at the Navy, where he had also been an aviator, a naval aviator. Oh, and he went to Princeton, and he was editor of the Princeton newspaper. He had worked for newspapers since he was 16. He made a fortune on Wall Street, and it is said he got FDR elected once or twice. One day he danced through a 16th floor window in his pajamas at the Naval Hospital in Maryland, and that was that. People have always said that he was the victim of an assassin, that maybe he knew too much about mind control, about the UFO problem. Lots of American military and government officials have died in such ways. Is there an awful darkness at the root of America, at the root of the modern world? Is there something larger, something more evil at work? Or just a lot of bad people, a lot of greed heads, backstabbers, and scumsuckers at the top, just like at the bottom, just at a larger scale? A lot of conspiracies, always, always a lot of conspiracies, big conspiracies and little ones, disinformation and hit jobs. One day you're a Russian under protection of the UK, and then you touch the door of your car in England, and you're nearly struck dead from a secret, highly toxic nerve agent that's not even supposed to exist. One day you're looking at your dumb relatives' dumb nonsense on Facebook, and the next you're going out to protest against the immigrants, against the others, all arranged by a bunch of Russians on the other side of the planet, or somebody in Arizona doing it for the lulz. If you want to see all of this in microcosm, all of this within a small group of mostly fringe figures, the paranormal crowd, the UFO hunters, mysterious billionaires who fund competing branches of research that never goes anywhere, never establishes any facts, never even agrees on parameters, well, then you may wish to examine the field of UFO research. What a bunch of charlatans and dingbats and humorless goons and self-important, self-promoting fleshbags talking to each other and only each other, hoping for crumbs from the billionaires or the media, nobody having any idea what's real or not, but always putting out some nonsense story. Somebody knows more than you do. Pay up now to get the inside knowledge. Go to the conference, the inside knowledge, and never leads anywhere. That is not knowledge at all. That is 90% intentional deception and 10% willful misunderstanding. Ask a relatively normal person about UFOs, and most will say they believe, or they want to believe. Believe in what? Ask them what it is they believe, or what they want to believe, and ask them why. Oh, they will tell you about the space monsters, the space brothers, the flying saucers, the alien abductions, alien implants. And where is all this from? Where is this narrative from? It is from science fiction writers, fantasy writers. It is the old lore of elves and fairy lights and foxfire and spirits dressed up in Cold War armor, dressed up for the space age, dressed up in a costume, a cheap costume. There are no facts. There is no information. There is nothing to learn here. You might as well study computer coding or accounting. At least you can get a job with that kind of study. Maybe. For the next couple of years anyway, until the last jobs go to the computer cloud, the server farm. What will they do with us then? And why would you expect to be anything short of a nightmare? In 70 years of this so-called UFO research, not a single fact has been established, beyond that some people at some times have seen things that cannot be easily explained. That's it. That's all. It's an empty well, a dry well, and if you get interested in this empty well, you will be encouraged to jump in, jump down like James Forrestal. The only thing at the bottom is you, broken apart, broken to pieces. If you were a biologist or an anthropologist or any kind of scientist, any kind of real scientist, and you had spent 7 decades unable to establish even a basic set of facts about your area of inquiry, well, you would be considered a failure, a flop. You would be shunned. Not even the nutritionists, the ones who told 2 generations to eat all the wrong foods, the ones who invented the diabetes and obesity epidemics, not even the nutritionists got away with it for 70 years. So here are some of the questions UFO researchers have failed to answer. A short list, because the whole list would take up the next couple of radio shows. What are UFOs? Where and when do they come from? How do they work? Are they part of nature? Are they mechanical? Are they intelligent or artificially intelligent? Are they benign or are they evil or are they both? Are they gods? Are they devils? Or are they both? Are they hallucinated in whole or in part? Are they technological tricks made by humans? Are they technological tricks made by gods or demons or even space aliens? Are they our evolved and hideous form from the future? Or the stragglers who survived the hell we create here on what was supposed to be the earthly paradise? Are they a distant equivalent of computer game videos flashing down at random, filling our ape heads with something that was simply a diversion created in a future we don't understand, zapped back through time and space by accident by some future version of streaming video and multiplayer games? Quantum gaming, imagine that. It's all some Disney, Pentagon, Kremlin, self-care, psychosis treatment accidentally flashing back a century or two. It's Fortnite from the future. It's Candy Crush or the Bible from a distant hell, a hell of our own making, hell on earth. Buy it today. Nothing. There's nothing known. You call the supposed occupants of UFOs space aliens because that's what they are in the movies and in the comic books, on the TV, in the video games. Aliens from where? Nobody knows because nobody knows anything. I can tell you that I've seen UFOs, whether in lights in the sky or, once at least, the kind of dramatic close encounter that should provide some information, some knowledge. And there's never been any information, only mystery. Well, so what if somebody was sitting right next to me in the Jeep when the giant black triangle zapped into being from a distant blinding white light on the horizon? So what? I've been interested in black triangle UFOs since the wave of sightings and military jet encounters over Europe in the late 1980s and early 1990s. Who's to say I did not simply see the UFO that was interesting to me and the other person saw the same thing, the way people start whistling a tune their spouse or friend or sibling had just thought about a moment before? That's how people communicate with their minds sometimes. We're not good at it. Sometimes it's random and sometimes it's focused. Sometimes it is caused by death or emotional trauma, and sometimes it's what George Carlin called brain droppings, but we are not good at it. Remote viewers are not even good at it, even though they get some results. We don't know how it works. We don't know how any of this works. A sense of wonder is not information, regardless of what the burning bush told Moses, regardless of the voices St. Paul heard in his head, the voices the little children at Fatima heard inside their little brains, the supposed devil who tempted Christ on the mountain, or the Buddha in the deer park, the love goddesses from Venus who spoke to George Van Tassel. It's all a bunch of vague information processed into a narrative that makes sense to the witness, the person perhaps randomly chosen to get blasted by some kind of utterly unknown and completely misunderstood energy or information, or the person who chose to pursue it, chose to pursue the mystery, or the person cursed to carry some dubious message to the people. A new day is coming. The end is near. Welcome, space brothers. The aliens are from Sirius or from beneath the Earth. They're from under the rapidly melting ice caps. Nobody knows. We know nothing. We spin around on a world we are killing as fast as we can, and we know nothing. I had planned to take a call tonight. Don't know what happened. Tomorrow night, March 17, Saturday, up in the high desert, Desert Oracle will be part of Curate Joshua Tree's art event at Outpost Projects, 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. I will be there with Red, Blue, Black, Silver. We'll be broadcasting from that old Yeller trailer right there on the property. It should be a fine evening out. What you do is you find Outpost Projects on your phone or your computer or Curate Joshua Tree, and you let them know you'd like to attend. It's probably okay for you to attend. Just call yourself an artist. That works pretty well up here for a lot of these characters. From Amboy to Zyzix and across the Great Mojave Wilderness, this has been Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from KCDZ 107.7 FM in downtown Joshua Tree. Friday nights at 10 p.m. and everywhere, all the time, with your favorite podcast player. You know, this podcast, Desert Oracle Radio, the podcast of this broadcast, is now coming to you from Art 19, the very fancy podcast company out of Los Angeles. We will do anything to improve our free service to you, our free service called Desert Oracle Radio. If we don't see you tomorrow night, have a real nice St. Patrick's Day, whatever that might mean to you. I like to spend St. Patrick's weekend about as far from all the people and the sports bars and the green beer as I can. Pretty much like every weekend, every week. I like to spend it out on the desert with all my desert friends, the coyote and the cactus wren, the vulture and the raven. And St. Patrick's Day means the rattlesnakes are about to come out of hibernation, out of their holes. The Mojave Green rattlesnake, especially. I guess that old St. Patrick wasn't so magical after all. And there were not any snakes in Ireland to begin with. Good night from the voice of the desert.
Sacagawea Audubon has their monthly meeting this week. The in-person meeting will be held Monday, March 10th, 2025, at Hope Lutheran Church, 2152 West Graff. A social begins at 6:30 p.m. The program begins at 7 p.m. Attendees are encouraged to bring their own reusable cups. You can go to sacagaweaaudubon.org for a link to attend the meeting online. And the subject of that meeting are the bats of Montana. So my thanks to Ken Lane and Red, Blue, Black, Silver for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thanks to everyone that volunteers and supports KGBM. And thank you for listening. If you want to reach me, the number is 406-404-6246. You can hear this program live on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgbm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgbm.org website. I'll be back next week with our St. Patrick's edition of Desert Oracle Radio Replay. Till then, keep doing good things, stay well, and sweet dreams. We'll have the sound of the reservoir people here to take us out.